Blog Talk Radio.
John Talk Radio tonight. This is our June 21st show, and my special guest is Sugar on the Dashboard. Braden, welcome to the show.
How's it going, John? Thank you.
It's going really good. I mean, it's really glad that you guys, you know, I got in contact with you. I really enjoy your music, and I just want more people to know about it. So we got an hour to talk about the band and the music. And just thanks a lot for joining.
Well, hey, thank you for listening.
Well, let's start off at the beginning. In the beginning, Sugar on the Dashboard. First of all, the first question is, how'd you get the name?
We got the name Sugar on the Dashboard from an unreleased Chuck Berry song, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I know, right? So. Yeah, I was reading something on him, and it said that he had, like, a song that was unreleased called Sugar on the Dashboard, and I was like, oh, wow, that's cool. So,
yeah, that is
like, you know
cool.
What? That'd be a cool band name.
That is a cool band name. And the last time I checked, and don't quote me on this, but I think he still plays in – he's from St. Louis, and the last time I heard that he still – he has a club there, like a restaurant place – music place, and he still shows up and plays sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
Dinner and now, show, right? That's like the epitome.
Yeah, I was thinking that would be pretty cool because I was in St. Louis once, and I said, well, you know, that would be awesome to go see him. And they said, well, he doesn't publicize it, but he just sometimes stops in and plays, picks up the guitar and plays with the band that's playing that night. So maybe you guys should go to St. Louis and play at his place.
That is the coolest thing. I'd do it.
Yeah, I bet. I would imagine he would really like the name. That would probably be pretty cool. So, yeah. Well, it's great to have you on. Let's talk about how the band formed. I know that you know, there's all various ways that bands come together. Sometimes people grow up together. Sometimes they just, you know, hook up because they're musicians and they, you know, their music just, musicians, as you well know, Braden, not all musicians connect. And sometimes a band can be, you know, work really, the synergy of the band is really awesome. Sometimes it isn't. How did you guys get together?
I mean, we got together, really, it was kind of a funny thing. I actually knew the drummer of my band. We were just friends, actually, and we played in different bands, and we played different shows together and stuff like that. And it's kind of one of those things where, you know, sometimes bands fall apart, and mine did at the time that I was in. And I went out to L.A., and I got the opportunity to record some demos with this guy named Michael Smitty Smith. He's the coolest dude, great producer. And so I kind of came back to Atlanta with a vengeance, and I wanted to start the next great rock band. And I thought instantly, I want that guy in my band, my friend Ryan, the drummer. And so I called him up and asked if he wanted to be in the band. He said, yeah. Also, he was also in a band with a guy named Britt, who's our lead guitarist, and he was amazing. I asked him if he wanted to be. Yeah, same thing. And, basically we kind of just pick and chose who I wanted. And then Austin actually didn't know how to play bass when he started. And he was a friend of Ryan's. And we were like, you know what, let's give him a shot. Just see if we can play, because we could not find any bass players to save our lives. And we were just like, yeah, let's try him. And he ended up learning all the songs.
Well, that's pretty awesome. I mean, it's like the fact that, you know, you mentioned to be the world's, you know, greatest rock band, or the next greatest rock band. Talk about that, because there's a lot of things going on in music, and with, you know, the show that I do, and I do several shows, and I interview a lot of musicians, and some have been around a while, and some are starting out, and some, you know, it's always, you talked about a producer and how you want your music to go. How did you choose the path that you're going? And I know sometimes, you know, Braden, it can be lucrative to go certain paths that are popular. You know, it's like, okay, we want you to sound like this. And, you know, I've interviewed, you know, bands that have gone into the studio, and they said, well, you know, that's pretty cool, but we actually would like you to sound more like this. How did you explain your sound to the listeners, and how you came up with that? And like some of, if you would like to share some of the influences that you've had.
Yeah. I mean, basically it's a good question. I really, in all honesty, I'm a total rebel. I rebel against like everything. So when you say something is popular, I'm going to just automatically go, you know what, that sucks, I'm going to do this instead. And so it's true, you know, what they say right now, especially, we're living in a pop world, you know? And so instantly when I hear that, I go, well, then I'm going to do this. And so, I mean, and I also obviously just love rock music, alternative rock music, punk rock, and stuff like that. But, you know, that's just, and really, that's always been the attitude of rock and roll, you know, just doing what no one else is doing and just doing your own thing. And that's what we're doing. And I think that's what makes good bands great, you know, because, you know, I could be doing what everybody else is doing and be pretty good at it for all we know, and, you know, get by and, you know, sure, yeah, join that awesome crowd and that explosion that's going on right now with the pop world. But why would I want to do that? I want to be great. I want to go against what people are telling me to do necessarily, you know? And so that's kind of really the reason, you know, I feel like, you know, saying that we're going to be a great rock band, I think that it's just, yeah, I think it just makes sense because of the fact that really right now, besides, you know, huge bands that have been around for a while, like the Foo Fighters, stuff like that, you know, like there are no real good young rock bands out there. You know, it's not like cool, quote unquote, to be in a rock band right now. And I think it's ridiculous.
It's a pretty good way to go at it, because like with me, you know, I hear all kinds of music. And I, when I started doing this show, like it's about 6 years ago, and I've been a musician, you know, I actually, you know, play a little bit and have been in bands, but I know what you're talking about with the music that with rock and roll, you're always like with me. And I know a lot of people, Braden, are the same way. They're always looking for that different sound, for that chord change, for that rawness, for that honesty of the music, you know? And I had people come to me and say, well, John, you're kind of into the rock, garage rock sound. you know, what about the blues? So I did about a year of that, Braden, where I just got into that to listen to it, you know, and to kind of understand what's going on there. And I've done the same with country. I've done it with pop. I've done it with all kinds of music. Now, the music that gets me is like, I have this like litmus test when I get a lot of music sent to me. I listen to it. If I want to listen to it again, that's a pretty good song. You know what I mean?
For sure.
It's like, and it doesn't have to be that, wow, that it took a music major to put that together, or, you know, go into a studio and spend, you know, $40,000 or $50,000, which, you know, I know people can do easily. It's also one of those things where you hear, like, I can hear a band that I like to go back to the early garage sounds of the 60s, and a lot of those bands weren't polished at all, you know, but they were just like MC5 would probably be one of the bands that I would, and the Stooges, where they were able, they could care less what people thought of them. They seriously didn't care.
Iggy Pop's the man.
All they wanted to do was play. And it was like,
exactly.
Yeah. They would have these, if you know, one of the best things, you know, that I can look at on YouTube is the early MC5 stuff. And I was able to interview their original bassist, who may rest in peace, passed away. And so the stories that they told Braden were like, they would go play and they would crank things up so loud and play in this kind of weird rock music with soul music with, they didn't really care. They would just, you know, play it, and all said half the crowd would leave. They would just get up, yeah, and then the other half would stay there. So, what's your take on the whole thing? Like, I really respect that. You know, you're playing the music that you want to play. Now, how does that translate into, you know, getting gigs and you know, paying the proverbial bills, you know, and getting from one place to the other? Because you did talk about, you know, pop bands can make money, but it, to me, you know, music is about integrity. How does that fit into the whole thing?
Oh, I think it's what you said exactly, integrity, really. It's one of those things where, like, yeah, like right now, for sure, because, again, we're living in a very much of a pop world right now. Yeah, it's tough for a rock band to go out there and get gigs and even find bands to play with that are similar in sound. But realistically, when you think about it, I find it to be very comforting in the sense that, again, I'm very confident in what we're doing. And I think that, you know, what it is really cool. I would feel like weirder and less comfortable and more awkward if I was doing what everyone else was doing. You know, it's kind of that whole little fish and like a big pond type thing, and right now I feel like the biggest fish, if not the only fish, in Atlanta right now doing rock music. And I think that that's going to be something that, yeah, at first it can get pretty frustrating sometimes, you know, when you're like desperately looking for people to play with and stuff like that and trying to get shows. But in the end, when you really think about it down the line in the future and we're playing sold out arenas and whatnot, I think it'll be very much worth it, because again, once we get that chance and that opportunity to just show everybody what we got, I think it's going to be something very worthwhile and something very unique, something that people will either go, oh, yeah, I totally forgot all about this sound, or, oh, my God, what is this? This is cool.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that. And it's like you were talking about the Foo Fighters. Now, people can kind of listen to the Foo Fighters now, but you go back, you know, Dave Grohl and Nirvana and how he was – you talk about raw rock and roll. I mean, my goodness, those guys were like, it's pretty, I love looking at their videos too, because they didn't seem to care what anybody thought about them. You know, it was basically, it was like, we're going to just play what we want to play. But I also agree with you, Braden, to the fact that, you know, they always say, you know, to a writer or to, you know, write what you know, or to an artist, you know, paint something realistic that relates to you. That's the same way with music to me. It's like, if that's the kind of music you want to play, it's going to come through. You know, people are going to know that it's what you're really feeling. Now let's talk a little bit about your songwriting, because that kind of fits into it to me. How did you start, or when was it that you knew that you could write songs, and that, you know, I mean, not everybody can do that. That's a pretty awesome talent to have.
Well, thank you. You know, it was funny. I started writing poetry actually at a very young age, and I couldn't play an instrument. I couldn't sing. I never tried or anything like that. And really, I would just write. I'd write poetry all the time. And that was kind of the way, yeah, that was like what I did instead of songwriting at the time. And eventually, though, it came to the point, music was always something that I really, really, really was interested in doing and really wanted to do. And it was something that, like, I just really thought at the same time, like, I couldn't, you know? It's one of those things, I don't know, I mean, you probably play an instrument too, and I do, but at the time, I remember there's that certain anxiety that you have when you don't know how to play an instrument and you just kind of look at it and go, like, how the hell am I going to learn how to play this thing? Yeah. So, like, trust me, if anybody's listening to this that's never played, I totally feel you there. And so I had a guitar, and I looked at it, had that same feeling, and I thought, but you know what? Screw it. I'm going to do this. This is what I want to do. This is something I think I can be pretty good at. And so I just picked it up, and I just started trying to play chords, anything I could, and I'd write songs, kind of get some tunes in my head. And, you know, lo and behold, I wrote my first song, and then my second one, and then my third, and now I'm on, like, my 1,000th.
Do you remember, Braden, the first song you wrote?
I do. I remember it was a song. Obviously, it was about a girl.
Yeah.
And
that's,
it was
like, 90% of songs, yep.
Yeah, right. And it was called, I remember, it's the corniest thing. It was called October, because the girl's MySpace name was October, and so I wrote it about her. And I made that her MySpace, was so embarrassing. So I made that her MySpace name, and I wrote that, and that was the song.
Oh, that's pretty wild. That's always I always love asking that, because, you know, with the songwriters, they go back and they think, wow. Yeah, I remember that. Now, if you listen to that today, do you think, I know maybe, you know, you can look back at it now and think, well, that was this or that. Did you have a problem sharing that with anybody at the very beginning? Because that's another step that you're talking about, writing poetry and being an artist and being a musician. You have to be able, you've got that inside of you, you've got that desire, you've got that fire burning, you know you want to do it, but eventually you're going to have to share it with somebody. Do you remember the first time you did that?
Yeah, and I do remember. I remember it was really with my parents, in all honesty, because, you know, when I started playing guitar, I was probably about 14. And before then, I'd just done sports, and that's all I did was, you know, typical, you know, boy stuff. You know, you just play sports. You kind of just sign up for basketball, for football, for baseball. And, yeah, it was one of those things. I wasn't really feeling it, and finally I started playing, and really it was kind of my parents took a notice to it and, you know, said, is this something that you're really interested in? And I said, yeah, I am. I really think I can do this. And, you know, I showed them some of my songs. I kind of sang some to them, and I guess they agreed with me because they've supported me ever since. So, yeah, it was really my parents.
That's awesome, because it's what I find – is if you find somebody that's honest with you, and that's definitely going to be your parents, and I'll go out on a limb here and say it might be your mother, because a lot
correct.
Of people will be, okay, I've got this song, I've worked, you know, I'm in my little room, I'm in my studio, and I'm working on it, and then you start thinking, gosh, you know, this sounds pretty good. And what I do is I bounce it off my wife, and I thought, there was a time where I thought, this isn't going to work. Because, you know, it's just, nothing will ever work. But, you know, it's, I can tell if she likes it, if she doesn't like it. And she's real honest. So she's going to tell me, well, you know, you might want to keep working on that. And I think that when you start off as a singer-songwriter, and at the beginning, you know, when you were taking your songs, Braden, to your parents, and you're thinking, okay, here it is. And their reaction, that, at the point now where you said you've written over 1,000 songs, you've played, you know, in bands, you're feeling like, you know, okay, we're tasting success, we're getting somewhere. Is that still present, that feeling, Braden, where when you're playing that song to those people, you're looking for the reaction that you're getting back from them?
Oh, I mean, always, because, I mean, I wouldn't write songs if I wasn't trying to get some sort of feeling out of somebody. You know, everyone likes to think that they could be relatable with their music, you know? And so I think, you know, absolutely. I'm definitely thinking, like, you know, man, like, I hope somebody, just one person at least, can kind of understand what I'm trying to tell them.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, I've interviewed people that have had number one records before. I interviewed the drummer from Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels, a rock band from the 60s and 70s, and they all, this is pretty intense, they all left their homes when they were, I think the youngest was 15, and they were 17 was the oldest,
wow.
I think, Mitch Ryder, and they went to New York and lived in an apartment and had a number one record. And it was like, I think, oh, my God,
how cool is that, huh?
How would you deal with that as a person? But they had to eventually go back home, you know, and they were just kids. And I think that, you know, it's such a cool thing to be able. And when I asked Johnny Bedenchik the question of what's the greatest feeling, you know, you've been on the stages of all over the world. And he said, Braden, the greatest feeling is the response he gets back from him, from the crowd. It's not money. It's none of that. He said when he looks up and he sees that someone in the crowd is being moved by their music, that's all he needs. And I thought, wow, that's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome stuff. My guest is Braden Gomer from the band Sugar on the Dashboard. And you can go on SoundCloud and Twitter, Facebook. Where else in the social media, Braden, can people – I know the new EP is called Discovery is Dead. Is that correct?
It is. It is called Discovery is Dead.
And where can people that hear the music tonight go to pick that up?
You can actually stream it. It's all up for streaming for free on SoundCloud, and we're actually going to put it on our YouTube page soon. I don't know why we haven't yet, in all honesty, but you can check us out, True on the Dashboard YouTube. We have a couple videos up, and on Twitter, at Sugar on the Dash. And then SoundCloud, the SoundCloud link is soundcloud.com/Gomer, G-O-M-E-R, music. And Facebook, too, actually, which is www.facebook.com/B-G-O-M-E-R, B Gomer.
Now, we'll take a music break and we'll play Clone Man and the Feisty Woman. That's quite a title there, Brandon. So if you could explain that and talk about that, and then we'll play the song, and then we'll come back and talk more about – I like to talk about the what you feel about, you know, music industry right now. And I know we talk pop music, but also with, like, the business side. People that I talk to, Braden, have a hard time understanding that musicians actually have to deal with that. So they do.
Okay.
But if you could talk about the Cologne Man and the Feisty Woman.
You know, it was one of those things where you got a riff and you just have to write something quickly to it. And that's what ended up happening with Cologne Man and the Feisty Woman. Even the title just shows I was totally just going off the top of my head. Just writing what I could, because I just had this riff in my head, and I was like, I have to write something out of this. This is going to be cool. And so I literally just wrote the lyrics in like 15 minutes, went down, and played the song.
Well, this is Cologne Man and the Feisty Woman, Sugar on the Dashboard. You're listening to John Talk Radio. We'll be right back with Braden.
I'll show you my stab wound. She's got a heart attack and it's coming real soon. I got an eye abyss and I owe a second knife. You're coming at me, son, and I'm gonna start a fight. Some days the girl because she'll always be faster. And if she's caught, would you be able to last her? I'm doing 20 years of this and I'm to the crime. I got a knife to pick, I'll do it in half the time. Hey, hey, who you talking to anyway? Got a secret but I don't know how to keep it. Oh, hey, hey, I don't know what to say. Got a secret but I don't know how to keep it. Oh,
shot my best friend. Too bad he moved to Bomber, they're trying to place it. I ran away cause I'm afraid of my shadow. The doctor told me just to load up on ammo. A broken home and she don't even look right. A barren bottom told her she wouldn't feel bright. I asked her what it took it like from the weather. She said it's raining but it still could be better. Hey, hey, who you talking to anyway? Got a secret but I don't know how to keep it. Oh, hey, hey, I don't know what to say. Got a secret but I don't know how to keep it. Oh, go, go, I don't even really know. You're out my door, so bad you know it like a prize. But bang, bang, and when you look my way, your eyes are shining outside of my bed light.
Sugar on the Dashboard. My guest is Braden Gomer, and we're talking about the band, talking about all kinds of things with music, and it's great to have you on the show tonight, Braden. So let's get into the side of things that, you know, I can feel the passion in your voice about music, and I know that once somebody gets bit by the music bug, it's all over. It's like it's never going to end. You're going to you know, just keep making music and doing it. I know that. From my own personal experience. Now, how is it? How can you explain to the listening audience about the business side of being in a band? Now, I know it's a lot of fun to get on the stage and play, but it doesn't come magically. It takes a lot of work to be able to do that. It's like, and also with that side of it, I mean, the work that goes into being in a band and getting gigs and doing all that and getting noticed. There's also the side of that you were talking about. Your music is available streaming, and I've talked to quite a few bands that have said, "Well, we're going to put our music out there, and we want everybody to listen to it, and we're not going to restrict it. We're not going to put a price tag on it. We're going to put it out there so anyone who wants to can hear it, and then we'll build upon that." Is that the approach that the band has taken, or talk a little bit about how? Your business approach to music.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely there are definitely two different types of musicians when it comes to the business side: the artistic musician and then the actual like business savvy musician for sure. I'm a little bit more on the artistic side in that sense that I'm not a business dude, but it's definitely something though that all musicians kind of have to do. And, I mean, you have to have a business plan for your band, no matter how unbusiness-like you are. And so that's the only way you're really going to get something, like, out there, you know? And so what we actually, are planning on doing is, I mean, we just put the songs out for streaming for free, obviously, because we're not anybody important right now or anything like that. So we just put it out there, and we put a EP release. We had, like, a press release and everything like that for it, and just – went, hey, this is what we've got so far, so let us know what you think. And so far the responses have been nothing but positive, which is really cool.
That is cool. I think that we talk on this show about the competition and how there's so much music out there. You know, it's saturated with music right now. And the thing that's changed since, like, when I was young is, you know, it took quite a big deal to – you know, to listen to music when I was younger. But now you can get into, you know, with the internet, and you can listen to bands, and you can listen to bands all over the world, and people are doing that. And one thing that I've heard from managers and music directors and people like that, and you guys on record labels, Braden, is that, you know, they give them maybe sometimes 15 to 20 seconds, and if it doesn't hook them, they go to the next artist. And I also, yeah, and I talked to my kids about that. I said, there's so much music out there. What is it that you look for? Be listening to another band. How do you guys approach that? I mean, there has to be something there that, you know, will get somebody to pay attention.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things where, they give you your 15, 20 seconds or whatever, but I think at the same time, if you're really passionate in what you do and you really believe what you're doing is cool, that's where also, you know, not being a part of the mainstream kind of helps you out actually sometimes, is because that's how you get that hook. That's where your hook is the fact that you're not doing what normal people are doing, and that kind of gets them to listen even more. And so for us, I think it will really work in our favor, in all honesty, once we get it to the right people, for sure.
Yeah, that's a good point too. What music does Braden Gomer listen to? What do you have that you like right now?
Oh, I mean, Nirvana, straight up, is like the greatest. Like that is like my Beatles right there, is Nirvana. And really, I've been listening to them a lot. And really, a lot of the '90s bands are kind of what I dig the most. I think that's when rock was probably the most passionate and the most real and raw and cool. Definitely in the '90s.
Well, there was definitely was a huge thing going on. I love reading about it, you know, in the Portland area and the Seattle area, all that was going on there. It was kind of like, it was kind of like pushing the big hair bands out of the way, which came from the 80s. Yeah. And which was basically, I don't even know how to explain it. I think the 80s were... Yeah, I think the aliens took over, Braden, during the 80s, and something weird happened to music. But I agree with you 100%. It turned in the 90s. It like got back to, playing a Les Paul through a Fender amp and not having, three stacks of Marshall so you could get a really cool photo op.
Oh, yeah.
And I always think and I don't have a problem with some of the... I'll go back, and listen to some of the music from that period, because I think, kind of being a music historian of some sort, I love that, the progression of it. Now, I think what I'd like to ask now is about your studio work. And, you're playing together, and you got the right band, and you got the right synergy, and you got the people that you want, to express your singing and songwriting. Now you've got to go and record that. How was that experience?
Oh, it was like the coolest. You mean you get to hear your song come to life, and that's like the coolest thing ever. And it's funny too, because some of the songs that you play sometimes kind of seem like a little bit weak already when you're playing them live. You're kind of like, oh, that one's probably not like super awesome, but I'll record it for whatever. And then you end up listening to it over the recording in the studio, and it kind of just blares and into the speakers, and you're like, wow, this is actually a really cool song. So some of your songs that you don't really like as much as the others become your favorites. So it's it's the coolest thing being in the studio, because also, I mean, creativity, that is it's your portal to a whole other world, man, where you get to go, all right, I want to do this and this and this and this and this, and everything is endless. It's so cool.
Now, you might have mentioned it, but I'm not sure, about the producer of the EP?
Yeah, Michael Smitty Smith. And you spell Smitty S-M-I-D-I. And he's the coolest guy. He's, really, in all honesty, he's that guy who totally, from a producer standpoint, one of the few people who really kind of just sees the direction that I'm going and goes, yeah, I like this. I want to help you with this. And it's always the coolest feeling, getting people in the music business to, when they say that and you hear it, it's the coolest thing ever. So it was thank you.
Yeah, that is. So what was it about him that you trusted? Because what I've also found out through music is that it's a big step with the producer and to hire a producer, because You know, it's not free for one thing, and a lot of times they may take you down a road or a path or direction that you're not really ready for, or you don't think it's going to represent your music. What was it about Michael Smith that you thought, yeah, this is it, he gets it?
Well, the funny thing is we were kind of thrown onto each other, and through my attorney, actually, Dina LaPolt, and she said, I know this guy, and he wants to record music, he likes your music, and what the real cool part was, he wants to do it for free. And so I was like, what? Okay. I'll meet with him right now. So
awesome.
We met and we ended up talking, and he's just a really cool guy. And the cool thing about him, though, which, you know, a lot of artists are kind of, control freaks sometimes about their thing, and putting their product and giving it to somebody is kind of a terrifying step at times. But I gave it to him, and he said, I really like this. And we kind of instantly were on the same page. We really knew what we wanted out of this, and we knew that we wanted to make, you know, just cool songs, you know. It didn't matter, really, like, because he's not like a rock producer, you know. He's a producer. He's a good producer for sure. He does all kinds of stuff, but, you know, he's not like a Rick Rubin, you know, where he does just straight-up rock records and stuff like that. He does a lot of different stuff, which was kind of cool, you know, because he could throw in his two cents about it. And with my rock stuff, it really matched really well.
I think that, you know, that's pretty cool too, because did you ever feel, Braden, when you were listening to the tracks and, you know, you would lay down with the band and the tracks down and you'd hear something that you didn't really, it wasn't in your, like, original thought pattern or how it wanted to sound, but it actually was what you liked? Did that happen?
Oh, yeah, all the time, especially as the singer, the vocals. Oh, my God. That was the one. That was, like, the thing where I was like, oh, geez, this is what I sound like.
Well, you know, that's another good point because, you know, the studio work, it can be kind of it can be stressful because, you know, you want it to be right and you want it to sound right. And I've always like the fact that when I talk to producers, you know, that they, you know, they want to do what the artists want to do, but sometimes it's like, okay, change this a little bit, do this a little bit, do that a little bit, and then things start sounding a little different. When you went into the studio with Michael and started laying down tracks and thinking about things, was it in the back of your mind at all, Braden, that this is going to have to be translated into a live show? And sometimes you can get a lot of production on a song. It may be difficult to reproduce that and put that on the stage. Was that ever in your thoughts?
Oh, all the time. I think that's the one thing about the studio that a lot of people kind of take for granted, because in the moment it sounds really cool, which is, you know, adding like a lot of stuff that you can't really recreate live. I think that's what's happening, honestly, right now with music, especially in the like alternative indie pop world that we're living in right now. A lot of people like forget the fact, like they record like five guitar parts and then they forget that they don't have five guitarists in their band, you know? And so they have to do backtracks, and that, I think that's the lamest, worst thing you can ever do if you're in a rock band, is use backtracks. And so, yeah, I definitely had that in mind, and that's why we recorded exactly how the band is: two guitars, rhythm and lead, drums and bass and vocals, and that's it. And that's how we're going to do it, always, because, yeah, you can't, yeah, it's something that you can't, it's hard to play three guitar parts with two guitar players, you know what I mean?
Oh, you know, I know exactly what you mean, and a band I interviewed a couple of weeks ago went into the studio, and they had all this incredible stuff going on. They orchestration and, you know, synthesizers and the whole deal. And they thought, wow, this sounds great. Like, we sound like, you know, amazing. And then they got to thinking, there's no way we can take this into a club.
We're not an orchestra. Oh, God.
Yeah, actually, it was, True Nature was the band. And they were, and when they went into the studio, they, everything was fitting. It was just unbelievable until he finally, I think it was, I just think of his name here in a second, but he said, wow, how are we ever going to do this? And to tell you the truth, And I think he's still working on that.
Because they're still figuring it out.
Yeah, I guess you could do the thing where they have the, which really drives me nuts, but I've heard it before. I just love music, so I'll go hear anybody. I mean, if it's a Elvis karaoke dude, I'll go listen to that. But I think it's always funny how, you know, some of the bands will have the backtracks going on, you know, and you're thinking, wow, how do they have that? You know, it's recorded music, and I can't say it's wrong. It's, sometimes it sounds really cool, but it's, I'd rather hear live music. So I think that's really, to me, it's, it sounds like you got a, you know, a really good deal there with hooking up with somebody that produced your music that really understood it, you know, and wanted it to be. So that's really a plus. I don't always hear that, so that's pretty cool. Well, let's play another song. My guest is Braden Gomer from the band Sugar on the Dashboard. Their latest EP is Discovery is Dead. It's streaming on SoundCloud, and I think you said Reverb Nation. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yep. And also you can be friends with the band on Facebook and Twitter. And they're friendly, so you can be friends with them. And we will be right back. Let's play Innocence in a Sense. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, that song, it's definitely one of the more interesting songs on the EP. It's kind of that one song that you kind of just experiment with, and you kind of go, yeah, this doesn't really sound exactly like us, but I like it. So, but I wrote that song kind of when I was younger, actually. It was literally the day after I graduated high school. And the title means what it says. It's one of the songs where I wrote it because I noticed throughout, you know, when I was younger and everything like that, we have a certain innocence about us that we can really do anything that we want in the world, you know, whether that be, you know, you want to be an actor, an athlete, a musician. And I noticed throughout growing up that a lot of the people that I knew that wanted those same goals and dreams as me ended up, you know, losing that innocence about themselves and kind of opened their eyes up to the real world. And here I was trying to become a rock star, like I said I was going to when I was 14. And so I kind of wrote this song that kind of goes out to those people and telling them, hey, you know, you can still do what you want to do. This is still available to you. So that's what Innocence in a Sense is about.
And let's play it. This is Innocence in a Sense, Sugar on the Dashboard, John Talk Radio. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. want to welcome you back to John Talk Radio. I can talk. See, that's the whole thing. John needs to talk so people can understand it. I want to talk a little bit, Braden, about let's enter into the part of the show we like to call Tech Talk. Actually, I'm just kind of a nerd about that, so I like to talk to bands. When you've got your sound, and we talked about how the sound is in the studio and how you translate it into the live show, what do you guys play through? Because I know it's kind of a big deal right now with capturing a certain sound, and some of the people that that I interview have like almost this incredible passion to recreate some of the sounds through their amplifiers and the guitars, and everything just has to be right. And a lot of vintage instruments are used, and a lot of vintage amplifiers are used today. Well, what do you guys do to get your sound to sound the way you want it to? And what do, like, amps and guitars and stuff do you use to do that?
Oh yeah. For me, my rig personally, when I started playing, I started playing on a Line 6, and I slowly learned that was not necessarily a good live amp to have. So I ended up switching it out for a Vox, AC-15, just because I'm rhythm guitar. So I have an AC-15, a Vox, and I play through a Gibson SG because I think that those are the coolest guitars, like, ever. And so I play through that, and then I have a Route 66 pedal, a Rat, and just simple tuner pedal. I think for me, like, I really like distortion, and I like getting a big distorted sound because, especially through it when a chorus comes out and you hit that distortion pedal, it explodes and it just sounds really cool. So that's what I play through. And then our lead guitarist, he plays an AC-30 Vox, and he has a Gibson Les Paul. So we're in a little bit of a war all the time about which is the best Gibson, because I think it's the SG and he thinks it's the Les Paul. And his pedal board, I couldn't even tell you. He's got so many.
Oh, yeah, that's just amazing because, yeah, I think, you know, I like to listen to songs and try to figure it out. It's like I should probably be doing other things, but I think, well, that sounds like, you know, a twin – reverb or twin deluxe, or it sounds like this, or, and with the Gibson SG, that's just a sound that is very distinctive. I mean, you can tell when you hear that, you know, wow, that sounds like a pretty good setup you got. Now, what, and being a bass player, what does your bass player play through? Just curious.
He plays through Ampeg bass amp, and he has a Epiphone Thunderbird. So he really digs that sound, which we also really dig that sound too, of just kind of like it's very plucky, but at the same time, if you turn that tone knob, you can get it's either one or the other. There's not really an in-between. It's either really thumpy, really booming, or it's really kind of plucky, and he's playing, he plays through a pick too, which also makes a really big difference when you're a bass player. So, but that's what he plays through, and he's got a great rig. And then he's got a Swollen Pickle for pedal.
I've never heard of that. That's pretty awesome. But it's, yeah, that's the you said it was a Thunderbird?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. And that's, you know, all Gibson stuff. So that's that Epiphone, that's a part of Gibson. But that's really neat. I like that. What kind of kit does the drummer play?
He plays on I want to say Gretsch. He thinks, I remember him talking about it, he thinks they're like the coolest drums ever because you get this like amazing loud rock sound, but for a good price.
Yep.
So he should totally be a spokesperson for Gretsch.
that would be cool. I mean, that's really a good thing because, I being a bass player, I always gravitate to that, you know, listen to the bass and listen to the drummer and how the two kind of connect together. You know, they have to be like one. And,
oh yeah,
yeah. It's always kind of cool if the. And I know it can be hard to do, but you know the bass player to play the drum sometimes and the drummer to play the bass sometimes, so because they're both doing almost the same thing, and I've always wondered if bands have done that. Maybe you should do that, but maybe not in a gig.
I don't know if it works as well at a gig.
yeah, hey, you're going to play this, and please, you're going to play that. But it's really cool to talk to you, Braden. It's great, and I think you guys are doing a great job. I would like to ask one last thing. Talk us through, as you know, the listeners, what it's like on gig day, what it's like for Sugar on the Dashboard. You know you're going to play. Walk us through a day, because that's always kind of interesting to me too, because people don't – I always say this when we go hear a band and someone will say, oh, they're not that great. I think, well, walk a mile in their shoes and tell me what you think, because they just – you know, it just doesn't happen. It's like, do you get – like, do you still get butterflies? I mean, what's the whole gig like for you, the day of the gig?
Oh, I mean, the day of, it's like the coolest feeling ever, because you're like, oh, yeah, you know, we're going to play a show tonight. This is the coolest thing. And, I mean, we haven't been a band for, like, you know, a bunch of years or anything like that. So we've had our trials and tribulations, you know, our mistakes. One time our guitarist, like, drank an energy drink, and he was way too amped and stuff like that. So we learned. But, yeah, the typical gig day now is, yeah, before it's, like, the coolest, you know, feeling ever. And then when you're setting up, you kind of go, all right, trying to get in that mindset of, like, all right, we're about to play. And we open up with Columbine and the Feisty Woman. That's our opening song usually. And I've started off. And so right when I started off, I always look at the drummer. And, like, we kind of just look at each other and go, it's time. Let's do this. And right when he kicks in, all hell breaks loose. And I think that's really the way anybody in a band listening to this, my advice would be to you to definitely – get everything out in those first couple seconds of the song, because if you like approach it with a completely nervous energy right off the bat, you're going to be nervous the whole time. And so if you just go out there and you just thrash right at the first couple seconds of your song, you feel great, in all honesty, and you just don't care anymore. And so that's what we really do, is we just do not care when we're playing live. We just go crazy.
Well, that's great, and there's nothing like playing music for people. If people haven't done it, it's just an amazing feeling, and it's just great. Is there any projects or gigs or anything you'd like to talk about before we wrap up?
Yeah, we're actually playing a gig on Thursday on the 26th at a place called His Rock in Cumming, Georgia. We're opening for a band called The Nearly Deads. You can actually look them up on YouTube. They're a good band. And we have another... like, we have a house show on July 25th, and then we're playing City Olympic Park on July 31st. So we got a lot of cool stuff coming up.
Oh, that's great. Well, Braden, it's been a great time talking to you. I really appreciate you joining the show tonight, and I wish you guys the very best.
Thank you, John. Thank you for having us, and thank you for listening.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to John Talk Radio tonight. And remember that you can go out on SoundCloud Reverb Nation and listen to Sugar on the Dashboard. And also their latest EP is Discovery is Dead. So thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll see everybody later. And everybody have a great evening.
To the place where I am, I'm moving fast cause I don't know where you are. Take me back to back, I'm here to fight for a second. I know you're a southern girl, I like that. Yeah, you gotta understand, yeah, you gotta understand where I'm coming from. I don't wanna be somebody else. Can you help me now, help me now? I don't wanna be somebody else. Can you help me now, help me now? I don't know what you know nothing about me, cause I can't really understand what you mean. Everything is going fast, I gotta make it last. What was once a boy has become a man. Too bad that man can't really stand to know, to know, to know he's alone, alone, alone. Yeah, I don't wanna be somebody else. Can you help me now, help me now? I don't wanna
Help me now. I wanna be somebody else. Can you help me now? I don't know what I'm feeling. So crazy that I hit the ceiling. I wanna be somebody else. Else.